So tonight, I thought we could focus on this idea of resurrection in the heart and mind of Abraham. And so where do we get this idea, I guess, of resurrection in the heart and mind of Abraham? Well, if you turn to Hebrews chapter 11, I'm going to read Hebrews 11, 17 through 19. And we'll see that the writer of the Hebrews places this concept of resurrection in Abraham's heart. And so we're going to try to make sense of that this evening. So Hebrews 11, 17 through 19, I'll read that now. The writer says, "By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, 'Through Isaac shall your offspring be named.' He, that is Abraham, considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back." And so this passage comes in Hebrews 11, which is known as the faith chapter. We read in verse 1, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen." And then the author goes on to give us kind of like a catalog of examples of demonstrating that very thing, showing what that faith looks like in the people throughout the history of the church. And he focuses on Abraham in this particular instance to demonstrate that confident hope that Abraham had regarding his son. And the writer of the Hebrews focuses on, you know, Abraham offering up Isaac as, according to God's command, as a sacrifice. But then the writer of the Hebrews says that the grounds that Abraham had for his willingness to do that really was Abraham considering that God could raise Isaac from the dead. Now, that word for considering means to give careful thought to a matter, to think about, to consider it, to ponder it, or to let one's mind dwell on something, right? So the writer of the Hebrews is saying that Abraham was letting his mind dwell on the fact that God could raise Isaac from the dead if he were to be sacrificed. Now, that's a pretty big thing. That's a pretty profound thing to identify. But it's interesting that the writer points this out, because is that what we see in that account that he references? And do we see this idea of resurrection played out in what we read in Genesis 22? If you would, turn there, Genesis 22, I'll read that passage for us, and we'll see if we can find this concept of resurrection there. Genesis chapter 22. We read there, "After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, 'Abraham,' and he said, 'Here I am.' And God said, 'Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you.' And so Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. And on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. And then Abraham said to his young men, 'Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you.' And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife. And so they went, both of them, together. And Isaac said to his father, Abraham, 'My father.' And he said, 'Here I am, my son.' He said, 'Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?' Abraham said, 'God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son.' So they went, both of them, together.
When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac, his son, and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. And he said, Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of the place, The Lord Will Provide. As it is said, to this day, on the mount of the Lord it shall be provided. Now, what's interesting about that text as we read through it is that there doesn't seem to be any explicit reference to this concept or idea of resurrection in Abraham's mind here, other than possibly what he says in verse 5 to his servants, I and the boy will come again to you. That's interesting. He mentions that I and the boy will come again to you, and several times throughout the passage you hear Moses record that Abraham and he went together, and he repeats that idea of togetherness. And so maybe there's this blossoming concept here of resurrection, but we also seem to have another kind of hope that he may not need to go through with the sacrifice in the first place, evidenced by his word in his to his son regarding the sacrifice. Now, before it even happens, Abraham says to Isaac, God will provide for himself a lamb for the burnt offering in verses 7 and 8. So almost as if he's thinking, well, maybe I won't have to go through it after all, and God will provide a substitute in your place. But despite this, the writer to the Hebrews seems pretty convinced that Abraham is thinking about resurrection here. But what's interesting is can we have this confidence that the concept of resurrection is something that would have been in Abraham's mind? Quite a few scholars actually have questioned whether the hope and expectation of bodily resurrection is present in the Old Testament, whether it's fully developed. And of course, they're thinking of long-term, kind of eschatological end-of-days resurrection. They question whether this is even expressed in the Old Testament at all. And while I would disagree with that assessment, it does seem to be the case that there is not a very clear or strong teaching of that kind of bodily resurrection in these early narrative accounts and experience of God's people. Yes, later on, you get some prophets who speak about potential future resurrection, and you get some prophets actually bringing people back to life, and then they die again. But this kind of thing isn't happening at this point. And so where is Abraham getting this idea from? How does Abraham get to resurrection in his mind? Well, here are some possible sources. Maybe Abraham is considering setting his mind on what he may have known about the creation of the world, right? Well, what happened at the creation of the world? Well, God brings the world into existence out of nothing, right? And so he brings essentially life out of nothing, which is very similar to bringing life out of death, right? A similar concept, a big picture concept, but a similar concept. Perhaps another source could be Abraham is thinking about what he may have known about Adam and Eve. So Adam and Eve were in a state of life with God in the garden. They were living in that covenant of works, that covenant of life, but they ate from the fruit of the tree, and what happened? They entered into a state of death. And it was in that state of death that God meets them in mercy and immediately promises life to them. Right? From the seed of the woman will come one who will crush the head of the serpent. Someone is going to come and reverse the effects that Satan, the serpent, has brought into this world. He's going to reverse the effects of death. And so there's going to be this sense in which life is going to come after this state of death. Again, but it's just a conceptual thing. Life after death. A third possibility is Abraham's reflecting on what he may have known about Noah and the flood. Right? In Genesis 6, we see that God is not going to put up with the disobedience and the rebellion and the wickedness in this world, and he's going to put an end to it. He's going to judge it, and he is going to snuff out all of the life in existence on the earth. Everything that has the breath of life in it will perish. And yet, what happens? God brings life after that overwhelming expression of death. The Lord envelops this whole world in death, and yet God gives life. The world itself experiences life from the dead, in a sense, right? Noah and his family are brought through death into life. And so we have another picture of an experience of life after death. Perhaps another possible source for Abraham is he's thinking about what he observed regarding the deliverance of Lot from Sodom. Again, we have God determining to judge Sodom and Gomorrah and destroy these two cities. And though death is going to completely befall these cities, the one that Lot is in especially, Lot is brought out of that death. Now, admittedly, this is more of an example of being preserved from impending death by the intervention of God, which may have been what was informing Abraham's thought that, well, maybe I won't have to go through with this, and maybe God will provide another lamb instead of Isaac. God will prevent this and preserve Isaac from death. Maybe that's woven into this picture here. And what's interesting to note about all of these examples is that in all of them, it is by way of God's sovereign intervention in all of these cases that life in some way comes from death, right? So God is the one who's going to bring life from death. In the cases of both Adam and Eve and Noah, God is even the one who sovereignly works to bring each of them out of darkness and spiritual death into a living faith, right? A living faith. And you also see that God is the one who sovereignly brings the world into existence and sovereignly rescues Lot out of that destruction. So the Lord is at the helm of life after death. But we do have to stop and think just for a little bit about how much Abraham actually understood about the creation of the world, about Adam and Eve, and even Noah. How much he knew is actually hard to know. Because even though those events, the creation of the world, Adam and Eve, and Noah and the flood, predated Abraham, the record of those things actually came after Abraham. Moses wrote Genesis, right? And so Abraham doesn't have the first book of the Bible to start to read to know what was happening, how the Lord created all of these things and how the fall happened and how the Lord preserved Noah and his family and all the peoples of the earth in this way. It's hard to know how much he would have known. Maybe he had some kind of oral tradition about it. But again, remember where he came from, right? He came from a far east in Mesopotamia, from the city of Ur. This is a pagan area, pagan land. He came from a family of moon worshipers, right? And so if he has any oral tradition at all, it's going to have been corrupted through fallen man as they tell the story over and over again, and you end up with all other kinds of flood myths and things like that, creation of the world myths. So Abraham's picture of these things may not be as clear as they are for us or were for Moses at that time. Now, it's possible, of course, that as God's interacting with Abram and Abraham, he changes his name, that he talks to him a whole lot more than what we have recorded here. That's always possible. But it's hard to know what Abraham knew. And while this may be enough evidence to convince Abraham that God would do something to bring a life from death, it's hard to be sure, and it's hard to be as sure as the writer to the Hebrews seems to be sure. But we also need to think about the fact that God had promised great things to Abraham. Right? So you think about Genesis 12, Genesis 15, Genesis 17. Now listen to what God says to Abram in Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3. I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And then in Genesis 15, he essentially repeats the same idea, but he identifies it's going to be from your very own son that this is going to come about. And then he brought him outside. He said, look toward heaven, number the stars if you are able to number them. And then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. Okay, it's going to be one of your sons, Abraham. But then he gets even more specific in Genesis 17. He repeats these promises again. And then he says in verse 19, Sarah, your wife shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his offspring after him. So God has made great covenant promises to Abraham. And these great promises were to come through Isaac. And so perhaps Abraham couldn't even conceive of any other solution for the death of Isaac but resurrection from the dead to account for how God is going to follow through on his promises here. But even so, this is still a pretty big leap, isn't it? And honestly, Isaac being resurrected is just as plausible, or actually less plausible, of a deduction than God, at least at the moment, being satisfied with Abraham's faith and obedience that he expresses, and then providing a substitute instead. So you don't have to go through with the whole thing. I'm happy with what you've done. We see that actually played out in the scriptures there. And so given the possible sources of this concept of resurrection in Abraham's mind, the idea of resurrection seems less likely a conclusion to draw about how God was going to work this out than providing a substitute instead. Does that make sense? And yet, the writer to the Hebrews focuses on the idea of resurrection as the reason, as the ground, the motivation for Abraham's faith that God's promises would come to fruition. So what was it that gave Abraham such conviction that resurrection was the solution? Was it just these possible sources that we have considered, or was it something else? I'd like to suggest that it was something else. It was something more, and something that came from Abraham's own experience. Think again of those promises that God made to Abraham in Genesis 12, 15, and 17. God is going to multiply Abraham's offspring. And it's not going to be through Ishmael. It's not even going to be through his servant Eliezer. But it will be through his own biological son with Sarah. But there's some concern about how this is going to come about, isn't it? Because they're old. And this seems a little impossible to them. In fact, Abraham laughs at what God says when he tells them that a son is going to come from you and Sarah. If you turn to Genesis 17, you'll see what I mean. Genesis 17, 16 through 17. Listen to what we read here. I will give you a son by Sarah. I will bless her, and she shall become and she shall become nations. Kings of people shall come from her. Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said to himself, shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? This is a really funny picture here, isn't it? You can imagine if God did this in our day and age and he decided that he was going to give these covenant promises via text message to Abraham, and he promises them this son by you and Sarah, what's Abraham's response going to be? R-O-F-L, right? He's literally rolling on the floor laughing at what God has promised to him. But God says in verse 21, I will establish my covenant with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you at this time next year. And yet this still seems impossible. In the very next chapter, we read of God making this promise of a child again, and this time it's Sarah who starts to laugh about it. Because it's not just that they're old. It's not just that they're past the normal window for childbearing, but things, as it's kind of phrased in the scriptures, things down there don't work so well anymore. As a matter of fact, they don't work at all. There's nothing to work with. In fact, the scriptures describe their situation in pretty stark terms. It says that their bodies were dead in regard to having children. Listen to how the writer to the Hebrews puts it just a paragraph or so before the verses that we read. Hebrews 11:11 through 12. My faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven, and as many as innumerable grains of sand on the seashore. And then listen to how Paul describes their circumstances in Romans 4:19. Abraham did not weaken in faith when he considered his own body, which was as good as dead. So there's that dead idea again, since he was about 100 years old. Or when he considered the barrenness, the word in Greek is literally deadness, of Sarah's womb. And so Abraham is dead, reproductively speaking. Sarah is dead. And yet what happened? Sarah conceives and gives birth to a son. Genesis 21, 1 through 2, the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised, and Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken it to him. Now listen to how Paul describes it. I'm going to read that Romans passage again, but broaden the context out a little bit. Listen to how he describes this whole situation in Romans 4, 17 through 19. Paul says, as it is written, I have made you the father of many nations in the presence of God in whom he believed, who gives life to the dead and calls into existence the things that do not exist. In hope, Abraham believed against hope that he should become the father of many nations, as he had been told, so shall your offspring be. He did not weaken in faith when he considered his own body, which was as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, or when he considered the barrenness or the deadness of Sarah's womb. No unbelief made him waver concerning the promises of God. But he grew strong in his faith as he gave glory to God, fully convinced that God was able to do what he had promised. And so what Paul identifies here and what Abraham and Sarah realized is that God brought what was dead to life. God brought what was dead to life, and God brought life from death. God brought their own bodies from death to life, and God brought Isaac to life out of that death. And so how could Abraham come to the conclusion that God would raise Isaac from death to life? Because God had already done that. They've already seen and experienced a resurrection from the dead by the power of God himself. And so as one commentator puts it, the faith that Abraham has in the promise of conception and birth of Isaac is a resurrection faith. And so the faith that led Abraham to obediently follow God's command to sacrifice Isaac was a resurrection faith. Abraham has faith in God's promises and faith in resurrection, and it is this faith in God's gracious promises and in the power of resurrection that leads him to that obedient hope, to that obedient faith. Abraham had a confident hope set before him that allowed him to persevere through this extreme difficulty and hardship at this point in his life. I mean, even when everything seemed extremely bleak, that the promises of God could not come about or may even be snuffed out, this confident resurrection faith, this confident hope allowed him to press forward anyway. And friends, the same thing is true for us. I mean, what hope do we have? What hope do we have of making it through hard and difficult circumstances? Perhaps circumstances that feel and seem like death to us. Now, what hope do we have in persevering in this life and really giving all that we have to the Lord when in the end, every single one of us will physically die? Do we have good reason to consider that God will raise us from our bleak circumstances and even from death itself? Well, friends, God has done it before, right? God has raised Jesus from the dead, and you, united to him by faith, he will raise you as well, as you are part of his body. You can live with confident hope and confident obedience, because not only has God raised Jesus from the dead, but he has already raised you. It's already happened. He's already raised you from spiritual death to spiritual life. He has brought you from death to life before, and friends, he will do it again. And so live with this hope, and like Abraham, live with this resurrection faith. And may that fill your heart with hope and peace and perseverance and confidence.